Good morning. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for tuning in with us today. You know, it's that time of year that we've all been waiting for. We're just 11 days away from welcoming our first day of fall on September the 23rd. So I think we can start to feel a little bit of it in the air and looking forward to feeling a little bit more of it as well. You know, as we move past the hustle and bustle of Labor Day, it's time for us to look ahead. I want to mention today that every year that we do a annual survey for our residents, which is done expertly by MMGY, and MMGY is a national research firm, that we just ask that you take some time and complete that survey. It certainly helps us as setting priorities regarding tourism. It helps the town have a better understanding of the thoughts of our residents. And so Kelly will place that in the chat box. And I just, again, ask that you please take some time, whether it's today, tomorrow, to complete that annual survey. Well, let's talk about Bluffton. And Bluffton is now the state's fifth largest municipality, the fifth largest. And our first guest has been leading the charge at Bluffton as the mayor since 2008. And I believe she was on council for 4 years prior to that. You know, Mayor Salka is not only loved by the community, but she's been one that is constantly delivered for Bluffton. And we know that day in and day out. But before we get to her, I want to just mention one thing on a personal note. And on a personal note, the mayor has recently added another addition to her family. And on July the 24th, I think it was, around seven weeks ago, that a new grandson, Martin Patrick, was born. So I know she's excited about that, and we're excited to hear from the mayor about all the good things that she's doing, and the council and residents are doing in Bluffton. Mayor, welcome. It's great to see you, as always.
It's good to see y'all. Well, see you, and see all the names that are on here. So thank you. Yeah, I have a brand new little baby grandson. I don't feel like I should be a grandmother, but he's a brother to a 2.5-year-old, and I have a daughter engaged. So it's to be a big year in 2023 and 24. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh,
we,
good.
We do. We
okay,
sure
you want
do.
Me to, you want me to start talking, huh?
Just, yes, go right on into it.
So, you know, we've got, you're saying we're close to fall, and when fall comes, our Arts and Seafood Festival is right around the corner. So October is going to be really great. And I know we're just hardly in September, but y'all stay tuned to that. It's just a fun, what started out as a weekend has turned into almost 10 days of just everything devoted to the river and to our arts. We're a cultural district, as you may know, as well as our blessed and beloved historic district. And I really believe that square mile long ago when I moved here, and that's all that existed, has really made us who we are today. And yeah, we're the fifth, you gave us that title, but I think in the next coming years, we're gonna be the largest town in this county. So that's exciting to come from the smallest overlooked town to the largest. Doing a couple of things I'd love to get everyone aware of. We voted on it and agreed on it a long time ago, but we decided to join the Community Foundation of the Low Country with three different funds. A police department fund, which a wonderful resident of Bluffton started that off with a very large donation just to help with canines and training and things that really you don't, they're extras in a budget. We have a Stay Safe or Mayor's Safe Driving Fund, which has replaced the Let's See 43. And it's something that really is to highlight the needs of safe driving, which I'll go into a little bit if I have time, but also to raise money for scholarships for our kids, whether they're going to college or in college. And then the third fund, which we just funded last night, is our public art fund. And the public art fund is set up with a committee to provide art in public spaces. So we have a 7 or 9 member committee set up, and we have $100,000 we just added to it, but it's through the Community Foundation. So, you know, anyone can donate to any of those. So I would urge you, it's a fabulous foundation we all should support. Go to the Community Foundation of the Low Country, and, you know, if you have some extra money or you want to give money or pay it forward, look at the many, many, many programs they have, but those three in particular. We did something yesterday, last night, that I think and hope it'll make a big impact on the state. We have been trying for years to get our state to pass a hate crimes ordinance, and really came about when we lost Senator Pinckney 7 years ago now, or 9 years. Our local delegation has been very supportive. Our senator has been supportive. We've gotten it all the way to the Senate, but it's being held up in the Senate. So all the mayors have passed resolutions that say they support this, and the town of Bluffton passed our hate intimidation ordinance last night. We are with Greenville, Charleston, Columbia. So big cities are doing it. They believe in it, and we want to help. So it's a tool in the toolbox for a judge. It's not something someone can use to have a charge, but it's a tool, and hopefully it'll poke the legislators in the state to realize that the town's mean business and we really want something done about it. We also passed last night a partnership, a private-public partnership at our last pad at Buckwalter Place, which Mary Lee's on next. It's right to the west of the Culinary Institute of the South. And we're working with a private developer to build out those pads. And the negotiations came through that this developer will build a building and give it to the Don Ryan Center. We're gonna use it for a landing pad. We're gonna use it to expand our Don Ryan Center. We're going to use it to put some of our businesses that are having a hard time finding a place to go into bricks and mortar and put them in there. It's a big deal. It's gonna see the end of that tech park. And really, for those of us who remember Buckwalter Place when it was just a mound of dirt and nothing going on, now you can really see sometimes, you know, it takes a little while to do things great. And that was voted on last night. So you can go to our Town of Bluffton website. You can click on these links for agendas. You can see everything we saw. We also video our council meetings. You can go on and see a recap of last night on YouTube and on the Beaufort County channel, like who's helping with this. I think that's it I have, unless y'all have questions.
Mayor, thank you. And we do have a few questions for you this morning.
Good.
Let's take a look here. Our first question is coming from Randy, and Randy is asking, what's going on with the Big Red Barn project?
Oh, yes. Well, I talked about it last time, so I didn't want to recap anything. Council decided about 6 months ago, instead of doing this, the Red Barn project in phases, which could take decades, we bonded it, we've planned it, we're going to finish it in one strong, swift swoop. Now, what's frustrating is the most difficult part is all the infrastructure. So it doesn't look really pretty right now, but we're putting in all the water, all the infrastructure that needs to be put in. And then you're going to see work on the barn. We're going to add a kitchen and bathroom. So that'll be a wonderful event space. We're going to have trails. We're going to have splash pads. I tell people, we're going to have fun stuff for kids of all ages, from the little ones to us. And really what I'm happy about, it's also a place the largest growth area in our town can call their own. And if you want to go sit, throw the Frisbee, take your kids, let them run around. You know, these houses are built on postage stamp lots now. There's no place to run around and look at this beautiful day. So I'll give it they say January, let's shoot for March, that you're going to see almost a finished product.
All right.
And go on, and to Randy, go on our capital projects page on our website. If you go under map gallery, there's a capital improvement project dashboard. You can click on all the projects the town's doing and you can follow along with what's going on and what the next steps are.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from Julie, and Julie's asking what the condition or the health of the river is.
And as you know, I'm not running this year, so I've had a lot of time to reflect. In 2008, we started getting word that there was some contamination coming in at the headwaters, and the headwaters is up out of the town limits, but in the Stony Creek area as you approach Palmetto Bluff. Nothing's gotten worse. When we have heavy rainfalls, and that's been throughout history, not just the last growth period, oyster beds have closed with rain because of the salinity drop. Nothing else is closed. We continue. We have a WAPAC, which is a Watershed Action Plan Advisory Group made up with technical people, scientists, and people who know a lot about the river that make recommendations to council. We are trying desperately to fulfill the promises that Beaufort Jasper, Beaufort County, and the town of Bluffton made to provide sewer to Stony Creek. That's where all the hot spots are, and that's the Chart Campground up 46. We're ready to go. We need Beaufort Jasper to come on and let's get moving. We got a huge grant from Bill Herb-Persman at the state, but there are threads to it in timeframes, and we need Beaufort Jasper Water Sewer to take the lead on this, and let's get started, because every day we don't do something, septic systems fail. And I do believe it's the septic that's not on sewer that's causing a lot of this.
All right. Thank you, Mayor. Next question is coming from Karen. And Karen's asking if there are any more parks in Bluffton that are coming online.
You know, we really do good at parks. That's probably not grammatically correct, but we're good at parks. We are looking, yes, to answer you. We build up $500,000 a year in a land acquisition fund. And I think we've totaled it up to about $4 million we have in the bank. I have strongly believed and continue to believe we need to look at communities and areas that aren't served with our parks. And the one that stands out is Buck Island Simmonsville. And there's land available that we're looking at negotiating with the seller to start in that area. I believe that'll be the next spot. But we do have the barn that we've got to finish. We're finishing up Wright Family Park. We bought Sarah Riley Hook's house on Bridge Street. I don't know what that's going to be, but it'll be under a park name. But that area is needed. A lot of young people live on Buck Island Simmonsville. They walk to school. If you go by Michael C. Riley and see all the young people play under that covered basketball goal, I mean, you can tell people, kids want to get out and play. So yes, to your answer, we have a strategic planning session coming in November, the day after your chamber, state of the region, actually. If you can attend virtually or in person, and you have thoughts of where we should look, we'd love to hear from you. You can email me, I'll email you back if you have any thoughts on that.
All right, you mentioned the Wright Family Park, and that really leads us into our next question coming in from Thomas. And Thomas is just asking for an update about the Wright Family Park and the excitement that goes along with that.
It's so exciting, January. I keep telling them, y'all told me January, I wanna see it finished. January, it should be finished. We are working with SCAD to come in and do help us with really a lot of the interior work. It's one of their classroom assignments in one of their majors at Savannah College of Art and Design. So yes, it's fabulous. We are planning right now to move the Welcome Center there and most likely use the second floor for offices. I think it makes sense for events, but I don't know what Stephen will decide. But the downstairs is gonna be open to the public. We put rules that no alcohol can be served on that park because it's so close to churches, but it will, hopefully be available for, events, listen and learn, anything like that, weddings, and open to the public to come in and see all the history behind that house and all of town. Put January on your calendar. If it's not that, you and I will walk to town council and speak at public comment.
All right, I look forward to that.
Can you tell Scott, I'm not going anywhere?
That's a good thing. Scott is asking if Bluffton plans to annex any more land.
Well, annexation is not controlled by the town of any town in the state. It has to be initiated by the landowner. So if a landowner comes before us and if he's contiguous or she is contiguous with our town, if it fits within our area, that we would consider an annexation. And if it will bring something more than residential, we're going to look at it. But we can't go out and forcibly annex. We have a lot. We have more than we can handle right now. I think you'll hear from Mayor Pro Tem Toomer, and all of us agree. We've grown, which if this town was going to grow, whether it was in the town limits or not. But we've grown. But what hasn't grown and what's kept up with it is the commercial. And quite frankly, I said it Saturday, the diversity of our town hasn't caught up to the growth of our town. So the diversity side doesn't have anything to do with your question, but we are really needing to entice commercial. And if I can add on to that, we also passed on second reading last night, our economic development incentive from the town that's going to encourage the needs of areas that are growing the fastest to get them to build or come to that area. And those areas are west of Buckwalter. So we're gonna push to bring veterinarian, primary care, daycare, the small businesses that need to expand but can't afford to expand. Mixed use storage development, not four story stuff, the class A office space in front with some warehousing in back. So we can focus on a lot of land we still own. And if someone wants to come in, they surely have the right to ask us.
All right. Thank you for that. This next question is coming from Angie. It's maybe it's a little bit of a doozy, but it's really a two-part question. Angie is asking first if you think there will ever be a four-way stop, a stoplight at the four-way stop.
Well, Angie, I don't want it, but you know, we have a new council coming next year. It's a state road. And I can't say that they won't do it, but does council want it done? We're a growing small town, and I know there's traffic. I live on Stock Farm. I'm in it all the time, so I can speak to this. A lot of the traffic is going here and there for many reasons, because they live in New Riverside and they work on Hilton Head, or they live in New Riverside or Buckwalter and they have to come into east of Buckwalter for their services, for their dentist, for their healthcare, for their daycare. I think this incentive that I just talked about is going to take a lot of that traffic, 30% off the road. Affordable housing, it's going to help if all of us would get together and get some workforce housing in all of our towns. People need to know Bluffton Parkway is the fastest way to get to Hilton Head, if that's what's causing this mess in town, to and from. I don't see a four-way stop. I actually would like to have a four-way stop at the Squat and Gobble. You know, maybe that could slow some traffic and queue it up. But personally, I don't want a red light. But you can surely email me and ask, and I can get you in the right place to let your thoughts be known if that's something you're interested in.
All right. And then part two of that question from Angie is she's asking what's going on with the development on that corner.
Well, there are four corners. Let me just go around. One is a park, which we love. The church sold. The church is actually sold to Campbell AME, and they have a 3-year lease, and they're moving out closer to New Riverside, again, going to where probably their parishioners live, which again, will cut some traffic off. They're moving out to that old Mindstream, Tullafinny area. Then I cross the street, Nickel Pumpers is, I don't think, ever gonna leave. Then the other side is the Joiner property. The owner of that moved the structure to another part of the property, and it is still considered a contributing structure. And he does have the ability to develop, but we haven't heard what the plans are. Whenever he does, along with our capital project list on the map finder, we have a permit finder. And today you can go on it on anything you have a question about. If there's a building permit pulled, you'll see a little blue bubble. You click on it and you can see where they are. You can see all the plans. You can see where they are in development. You can see if they've passed or failed inspections. But nothing right now, other than they moved the house and got a CO for the Joiner house.
Mayor, we're having several questions, and we're not going to put you to this today, but we'll maybe state of the region. Some of the questions are, what would you like your legacy to be? What are some of the things you're most proud of as your accomplishments as mayor, and some of those things? But unless you want to chime in on any of that right now, if not, we'd love to hear more about that at state of the region.
Anything. But I will tell you, it was a struggle to decide what to do. And I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss it because I grew up with this town. I love this town. And I tell people, the person who takes my place needs to love this town, live for this town, believe in this town. And if you can do those three things, you're going to be a great leader. I don't want to get to the point I won't miss it. And I it was a hard decision, and I could talk all day. Hey, I'll take you. Let's go to coffee. I'd rather meet one-on-one, but state of the region is fun.
All right. Very good. So I guess we'll leave them with this: love, live, and believe. And that's the requirements for the next mayor of Bluffton.
That's it.
All right, Mayor, it's always great to see you. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for your leadership and all that you have done and continue to do in the months and years ahead, I'll say.
That's right. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to be on the other side of the podium.
We look forward to seeing that side.
Okay. Thank you all.
Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Well, that was the mayor, the great mayor of Bluffton, Lisa Salka. And now we're going to transition into our next speaker, and really going to talk about a very, very important initiative, and that's helping tackle our workforce challenges. You know, looking at research reported by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, that if every open position were filled today, there would still be 4 million jobs that are available in the United States. So workforce challenges are felt nationwide. We're already addressing them right here at home. And one of the ways that's happening is through the Technical College of the Low Countries new Workforce Training Center. And that's a $26 million project. And we're looking forward to having Mary Lee Carnes with us. And she's going to talk to us a little bit about that initiative and other things that are going on at the Technical College of the Low Country. And thank you for joining us, Mary Lee.
Bill, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with this group of 85. I want to take this opportunity to thank Mayor Salka for her leadership, for her passion. This has been an example to us all, for her support of the college, for her support of our communities regionally. It's been an honor to work with her. And we know we're always going to be working together, so we look forward to continuing to work with Lisa Salka as we continue to grow our communities. The Regional Workforce Training Center has actually been a 10-year effort. And it's been a 10-year effort of almost fanaticism to kind of get it to where it is right now. I'm wanting to start at the top a little bit just to remind us all the role of community colleges in economic development. And the Technical College of the Low Country is one of 1,100 community colleges nationally. And those community colleges serve 40% of the undergraduate population in our country. And by and large, we primarily serve working learners. These are adults who are attending part-time. So they're working in and out of the classroom. They're either trying to upskill, gain new skills, or entering new careers. And that's what makes community colleges and technical college of the Lowcountry so important to economic development and economic investment, whether that is existing business investment or new businesses looking to come into our area. They're looking to see if we have that workforce, if we have a developing workforce, it's an incentive for them. And the challenge with workforce is one, workforce availability, and also skills gap and retraining. And our responsibility to the community that we serve, to the region that we serve, the responsibility of Technical College of the Lowcountry is to address that, is to address workforce availability and training. So the Arthur E. Brown Regional Workforce Training Center, you know, is part of that solution. So I do have some really cool picks that I'd like to share and kind of talk you through then what the Regional Workforce Training Center is, what it's going to do, and when we'll all see it. So I'm going to go into my screen now, if that's okay. Now, these renderings were first created around 2016, 2017. They are being it's being revisited currently by a team of architects out of Columbia. You're looking at our Bluffton New River campus, and this is the existing building. This is the Angus Cotton Academic Building that is on campus now. This is the new Regional Workforce Training Center. The center is going to be 50,000 square feet. And it's going to be able to host a number of programs and also be able to host customized programs as industry and business comes in and need to train workforce for startup and other reasons. So this is going to have high bays. So we can bring in some of those technical trades, including electric vehicle technology. Supply chain logistics is going to be a program here. We're going to expand our computer technologies and our business programs within this building. It's going to be able, we invested in a study, and this was probably 4 years ago, a national firm to do an assessment of two things. One is the programmatic needs currently, so the training needs currently of our area, and also future needs. So the firm worked with our economic development community to get their input. They also looked at what was happening nationally, because what happens nationally does happen in the Lowcountry. And they put together an assessment of the impact of the Regional Workforce Training Center. And what the Regional Workforce Training Center is going to enable all of us, empower all of us, is it's going to allow Technical College of Lowcountry to have an additional 850 students. And that's 850 new students. Of those 850 students, what the assessments, one of the outcomes of the assessment was that 12% of those will be students new to the Lowcountry. So when we talk about workforce availability, whether it's the Culinary Institute at the South or the Regional Workforce Training Center, what it gives us opportunity to do is to attract workers, attract neighbors into our area. A fun fact that I'm always repeating is that if we bring an individual, let's say we bring a student, whether that's an adult student or a traditional college student, into our area, we have a 72% chance of keeping that individual here to contribute to our economy, here to contribute to our workforce. The Culinary Institute of the South is doing that. We have students now, we have one from Texas, we have one from North Carolina, and we have a 72% chance of those individuals staying here and contributing to our resort and tourism industry regionally. The Regional Workforce Training Center will do the same thing. Some of those, that 12% of kind of new to the Lowcountry students, would likely be transitioning military, that will this will give us an opportunity to keep some of those quality folks here local, which is something that as an economic development community, we've wanted to do. And the Regional Workforce Training Center would then also be an opportunity to address skills gaps of local workforce retraining. It will serve existing business as well as incentivize new business coming into the area. It will also have career dual enrollment. Community colleges are working learners, mostly adults, but they're also serve a significant role in dual enrollment. High school students, primarily in their junior and senior years, who can earn dual credit, high school credit and college credit, and some even graduate with their high school degree and their associate's degree at the same time. This is certainly a bonus for parents because it helps decrease the cost as all those credits transfer if those students to go on to a four-year college. But with the Regional Workforce Training Center, would give us to expand our ability to offer technical dual enrollment. This is dual enrollment, high school students involved in the supply logistics program while they're still in high school, in cybersecurity while they're still in high school, in EV technology while they're still in high school. So it will really power us economically and benefit us all. It's kind of community colleges, regional workforce training centers, technical college, the Lowcountry. We really, it's a dual client success, with the client being that students that he or she earns more financial, economic power and growth, and the other client being the regional economy. That the Regional Workforce Training Center is going to serve and as the Technical College of the Lowcountry serves. So why the Arthur E. Brown Regional Workforce Training Center? I hope many of you know General Arthur E. Brown. He is in the DNA of the Technical College of the Lowcountry. General Brown is the founder of the Technical College of the Lowcountry Foundation Board. He was on the Technical College of the Lowcountry Commission, and the commission is like our board of trustees for almost 20 years, a chair of the commission for more than 10. He is to be credited with much of the success and growth of the college. And we want to honor him by putting his name on this building. He deserves so much more. But this is why that it will be named the Arthur E. Brown. It is named the Arthur E. Brown Regional Workforce Training Center. So how? As Bill mentions, the price tag is about $26 million. The effort has the support of our delegation and our local officials. This past year, the state has appropriated $10 million towards the Workforce Training Center. County Council has discussed matching that, giving us the $20 million necessary for construction. The $6 million that we anticipate is still needed is really kind of more focused on startup operations and smaller FF&E costs. And we're going to be addressing that in a number of ways. One of the things that the TCL Foundation anticipates doing is launching the college's first ever capital campaign. That would be a four-year effort aimed at fully realizing the capacity of the Regional Workforce Training Center. I always like to have the opportunity, and this is a good one, to remind everyone how the college is funded. And why it is so important and why we so appreciate leadership such as Mayor Silka in the growth of the college, because we wouldn't have had the growth, we wouldn't have had the Culinary Institute of the South, and we would not be anticipating the Regional Workforce Training Center without it. The Technical College of Lowcountry is not state supported. We are state assisted. A little less than 20% of our operating budget comes from the state of South Carolina. And that's below the national averages. Nationally, community colleges receive about 34% of their operating budgets from the states they serve. So we're under that average. We set the tuition and fees for students are set only to cover the actual cost of instruction. So like institutions, and I come out of Penn State, like institutions like Penn State, there's no additional recovery of tuition or there's no additional margin so that we can expand programs, so that we can buy new equipment. That is why our community partnerships, our economic development partnerships, and everyone on this call is part of the economic development community. We all contribute to it. That is why these partnerships are so important, not only to the Technical College of the Lowcountry, but community colleges, you know, everywhere. It's only together that we address the needs of our communities. The Culinary Institute of the South is your culinary school. You built it. That was built with all local funds. And the Regional Workforce Training Center is going to be an equal partnership. You know, the state has made a significant contribution, but it's really going to be us locally who fully realize the Regional Workforce Training Center. So I have run out of breath now, Bill. And I want to stop sharing.
All right. Thank you for that very, very informative presentation. And, you know, just hearing you speak of General Brown, Arthur E. Brown, and the Regional Workforce Training Center, and the Angus Cotton Academic the academic center, I guess it is, just two fine gentlemen, and that have meant so much to this area, and it's so appropriate to be named, each of those buildings to be named as they are. And I just congratulate you and all that were involved in helping make those decisions on the naming those buildings.
Thank you.
So let's move right on into questions, if that's all right. The part of what you just mentioned towards the end was the Culinary Institute of the South, and Reagan is looking for an update on what's going on there.
Reagan, thanks for the question. There is so much going on there. We knew it was going to explode, and each day it explodes a little bit more. Right now, we have about 126 students in the culinary and baking and pastry program, and that is tracking as per the business case that we put together probably 5 years ago. The Foodseum is, if you all are aware of the Foodseum is actually an important part of the culinary school because it was important to the funding. The culinary school became eligible for ATAX funding because of the Foodseum. And I quote Charlie Clark, it's a mighty 900 square foot space. It's small, but mighty. I believe it's what Charlie put it some years ago because he's been part of the brain trust in that Foodseum. We're behind in that, and we hope to have the Foodseum open. That RFP was just put out on the street, on the state's street. And we hope to have that, let's say, by the end of this fiscal year, by June 30th, 2024. And the Foodseum is a food museum, you know, focused on the history and culture of Southern food, you know, in particular. On the personal enrichment culinary courses, they really took off with a hire some months ago of Carrie Hirsch. And Carrie Hirsch is overseeing the personal enrichment culinary courses that happen primarily on Saturdays, 3-hour courses on Saturdays. We make it our intention. We already always said that the culinary school is going to serve two purposes. It's going to build a quality pipeline into our increasingly important, very important, high quality resort and tourism industry. And we're also going to use that school to showcase the talent, our culinary talent of the Lowcountry. So one of the ways that we're doing that is for the CE personal courses, we invite that talent in so we can showcase their talent and share their talent. And those courses are usually about 12 individuals. Last year, so Dean Francine Mars, the Dean of the Culinary School, it's Dean Dr. Chef Mars. I like to use all three of her titles. She has just celebrated her year anniversary. She has had a huge impact. Dean Mars has already made her mark. One of the most integral things she's done is totally to review the curriculum. So we're going to get AFC certification when those graduates. Reagan, did I fully answer?
I think so. Let's move on to another question that's coming from Marty. And Marty is asking, what programs or fields of study are popular among students? And what are you seeing in those?
Marty, what's really has taken off is the cybersecurity program. That the cybersecurity program really just launched this past January. And we have over 70 students in that cybersecurity program. It is housed, it is physically right now in the Beaufort Mather campus. But by next year, we're also going to be offering it at the Angus Cotton Center at the New River campus. So cybersecurity is really the most popular, new program right now. Foundational to the college has always been the health sciences, and almost half of our students are in one of the health sciences. They continue, to be foundational, and those enrollments continue to be very, very stable. Incremental increases overall, very stable. Culinary is continuing. It has a trajectory. We fully expect at 126 students, we expect that to almost double for fall 2024. That's the trajectory that is on. On the non-credit side, being mindful that at the Technical College of Lowcountry, we have credit programs. That's where you earn college credit, associate degrees. And we have non-credit programs. So commercial driver's license, welding. So I just speak to that a little bit. The CDL program, commercial driver's license program, is fully enrolled through March 2024. So we just cannot get enough trucks and adjuncts to meet that demand, right now. The welding program, we just hired another welding instructor. So because we have a pipeline of students into welding. And a wait list, so we're going to be addressing that. Business accounting is also taken off, Marty. That enrollment has doubled over the past couple years, and we're at 51-52 students in business accounting. So those are kind of our top areas right now.
Thank you, Mary Lee. Our last question is coming from Kelly, and it's kind of a fun question. And Kelly would like for you to talk about the new mascot, the TCL Tides, I believe it is.
It is. Thank you, Kelly. So, yeah, we're so excited, the TCL Tides. So we started this effort probably in earnest right after the start of the calendar year. And it was a community involvement, and we worked. Put some surveys out, boiled it down to four ideas, and all with good rationale as to why they merit consideration as the Technical College of Lowcountry mascot. So there was the tomatoes. And think about that a little bit. I'm not going to give you all the literature in the background, but there's rationale behind that. Shrimp, again, rationale behind that. Loggerheads and tides. So we put this out, we put the survey out to the college community and to the community at large. And more than 800 people responded. And the majority, significant majority, chose the Tides. And of that significant majority, the majority of the majority were the students and alumni who chose the Tides. And of course, there's no better group, no one who actually deserves the to choose the mascot than the TCL Tides. So we rolled that out about a month ago. And again, you know, the Technicolor Low Country started in 1968. So this is our mascot and we're excited about it. If you haven't seen kind of the mascot logo, I'll get it out there. We'll put it out there again. So next step in the mascot is the mascot will take form, will be embodied physically. And that will be the project for right after the calendar year. So when we start the academic year for fall 2024, there will be a living, breathing Tide. Now you think that might be hard to do, but you know, there's highly creative people out there. And I've seen some of the drawings for the Tide come alive and it looks great. So we really look forward to that. And Kelly, thank you for that question. We're really excited about the new mascot.
Mary Lee, one last thing, it just came in and that's Charles. And Charles is asking just to speak a little bit about the big fundraising event in November and just touch on that briefly.
Charles, thank you for that. The fifth annual Chef's Table benefit and auction for the Culinary Institute of the South at Technical College of Low Country is November 2nd. We need to always shout, this is really the effort of Sea Pines, US Foods. This is a community, the industry community that comes together to support workforce development. That's the Culinary Institute of the South is workforce development. It's important to the industry and they come together to make sure it happens. All proceeds go to supporting workforce development, Culinary Institute South Technical College of the Low Country. You'll be seeing more information about this on the street. It sells out actually before we get it too far in the street. So if anyone's interested in attending, please let me know. You know, right away, it's easy to find my contact information. And Bill, before I leave, I want to thank the chamber. When we talk about workforce development, I want to thank the chamber for what you do and the partnership you are with entities like the Technical College of the Low Country and the community at large. And if I can recognize one of those things that I'm happy to be involved in is the chamber's internship initiative. The chamber is putting its capacity, its reach, its professionalism, its expertise, and importantly, its reputation behind an internship initiative that will help us all as we all work towards growing our economy and keeping our workers here and keeping our workers trained and skilled. And that helps us, Bill, that helps the Technical College of Low Country. And I want to thank you and I want to thank the Chamber for your efforts.
Well, thank you. And we appreciate your leadership in that as well. Mary Lee, as we were sitting here talking, and I was thinking about your title at TCL as the Vice President of Institutional Advancement and Workforce Development. I think about the Culinary Institute of the South. I also think about this new Regional Workforce Training Center. And I think at the end of the year, your report card should check out as an A+ or an A+++. So well done to you and the team there. Thank you for being with us, but thanks for making such important things happen for our region.
Thank you. And thank you all. Thank you all for listening.
All right. That was Mary Lee Carnes, the Vice President of Institutional Advancement and Workforce Development at TCL. We're going to switch now to being a fun time of year. In addition to having the cooler weather, one of the things we love about fall, it also kicks off our festival season. And from the historic Bluffton Arts and Seafood Festival to Concord to many other events, there's always something to do here in the Low Country on the weekends. And the man that's with us today to speak about some of that has took his job with the rec center, the Island Rec Center, in 1986. And he's been running it for almost that long. And so Frank Soule oversees the greatly expanded, I like to say, Island Recreation Center. But what you might not know is that so many of the fantastic events that take place here are created and run by Frank and his team. And so Frank, again, we're delighted to have you with us. Tell us what's going on this fall season and any other updates from the Island Rec Center.
Thanks, Bill. Yeah, 1986. I don't think you're too far from there either, are you? So I remember meeting you way back in the day. So I would just want to kind of, I need to maybe explain a little bit more because we may have some new people on the call here or on Zoom. The Island Rec Association is actually a nonprofit organization that has had a memorandum of understanding with the town of Hilton, had to run recreation programs in our community since around 1983 with the development and construction of the old rec center building. So it's kind of a unique partnership that we have with the town of Hilton Head that works out very well. And it really kind of creates a lot of opportunities for us. And we've been working on special events ever since I came here. In fact, I was just looking through some old photos the other day. We had the USTA Bud Light triathlon series here. I got to work on the last one. We did what was called Slam Fest, which was out at the Bluffton Rec Center at the time. And we had athletes from all the time. Wilt Chamberlain was even here. So it's been kind of unique on what we do. And events has always been part of what we've been able to provide to the community. We have such great both private and public event sites here now compared to what it was in the early days. The first Wing Fest was actually held at Shelter Cove at the harbor, and there was an open space there, and that's where kind of a lot of the community events were held. And then here comes the creation of Shelter Cove Park, and Shelter Cove Park now is in a second phase of its location. But then adding the Low Country Celebration Park has been awesome to our ability to provide great events at two different locations. In the fall really kind of cranks up the event season. To kind of be selfish in what we do, we also take advantage of the Coastal Discovery Museum. One of our first big fall events, although we're working with the town on the 360-40 concert, but one of the first big events that's Responsibility Association is actually working with Gowanus Club at the Chili Cook-Off, which has been here forever, but we've tied in what we call Jeep Island. And our goal is to bring Jeeps in from all over the Southeast to come to Hilton Head for a weekend. If you're a Jeep owner on Zoom, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not, but I'm starting to understand the culture, and it's a really fun event. And that's in a couple weekends, the first weekend of October. And then we have a series of smaller, like what I call community events or family-friendly events. We've been doing a series of family fishing nights. We started those last spring. We have our second one that begins on, which is still available to register for, but which is this Friday. And along with this Friday, we have kind of a unique event that we call the Beer Mile. We started that last year, and it's kind of a fun event. We actually have a lot of visitors here to the island, but we also have a lot of locals that take part in that. And that kind of talks a little bit about our September and October. But we also have, in November, we have our Oyster Festival. It's a two-day event. It's grown into be more of a regional event, and we're excited. We have people that come over. We have an all-you-can-eat event on Friday night, but then I talked about the Low Country Celebration Park as one of the opportunities that we take advantage of for our Saturday, and that's in the weekend of November 10th and 11th. But I fail to miss. I'm kind of looking over at my calendar. There's just so many other great stuff going on, and I'm probably going to leave somebody out, but obviously Harbortown Shrimp Festival is coming up. Low Country Shrimp and Grits is also going to be at the Low Country Celebration Park. You mentioned the Concours. Can't forget about the Lantern Parade. That's an awesome event. This year they're doing some new and unique stuff, and I'll let Natalie say all that. But, you know, Harbortown's been, Shelter Cove has been doing a lot of great things down there, and they're hosting events down there in the evenings and taking advantage of the local artisans coming. Can't forget Crescendo, did I say that twice? But can't forget that. That's coming right around the corner. But also the there's some Jazz in the Park that's going to be coming up. And we've just had great stuff going on Hilton Head. And whether it's during the weekday now, we see a lot of people utilizing Low Country Celebration for events during the weekday, holding little pop-up concerts to the weekend events. So if you're looking for something to do, you can find it. And obviously going to the Chamber website, but you can go to the Island Rec website. You can go to the Low Country Celebration Park website. So there's lots of stuff going on. So,
Frank, thanks for that update. And you were talking about the addition of private and public event spaces. You've certainly been through the years instrumental in helping to bring those to fruition. And your participation and leadership in that is something that has really, really made a difference in those. So we want to thank you for that. So, Frank, is there anything program-wise going on there at Island Rec that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, you know, we're always busy, but as you know, with the addition that opened up in 2019 in the fitness facility, we always have classes and activities that people can either come daily or have a monthly pass and come to those programs. We're really kind of promoting a lot of kids programs this time of year. We have a kids night out, but we've also expanded into adaptive recreation and working with that segment of our community. We have lots of inclusive programming. We're going to have a kids night out for our kids that were in a challenge camp. And a lot of this stuff is all new to us, but I can't forget pickleball. We have tons of people out here at the Island Rec Center courts playing pickleball every day. And I can remember when there was 10 people out there playing, and now between two courts and the town's really taking a huge commitment in upgrading the Adriana courts, but then we'll be upgrading the rec center courts. And then I think, you know, in somewhere sooner than later, hopefully we'll have a pickleball center, because it's the fastest growing sport in the country. But you'll also find out that we have over 700 people that have signed up and played. It's one of our largest programs outside of, or it is our largest program. Youth soccer used to be, but pickleball now is. So it's kind of unique in that sense. So we have, you know, lots of programs. IslandRecCenter.org will get you to our website. Can't forget the Senior Center, which is down and where the Sheriff's Department building is. They have lots of great programs for active seniors too.
All right, Frank, thank you for being with us today. And we look forward to seeing you very, very soon again.
Yep, thanks, thank you.
All right, as we wrap up today, I want to remind everyone about this weekend, as the part of the 360-40 celebration, the Singer-Songwriter Festival taking place September 14th through the 17th, which is this weekend, Thursday through Sunday. Lots of great musical acts. You want to be a part of it, and I look forward to hopefully seeing many, many of you out there. As I close, if you're looking for more information on what's going on in the area, I encourage you to go to our website and sign up for the Low Country Lowdown. And each Friday in your email, you will have a calendar of events and things that are taking place. Lastly, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for being with us today. And we look forward to doing this again very, very soon next month. So have a great rest of your day. We'll see you this weekend.